This is the Faherty Podcast presented by Farmers Insurance.
Kind. In the words of the late, great Victor Borge, I'd like to thank my parents for making this possible and my children for making it necessary. I have learned one very important truth while doing this show. Great conversations are only possible with great guests, and I've got one tonight. With three major championships in 14 months, Brooks Koepka is a newly minted solid gold golf superstar who is finally being asked about greatness that didn't come easy. All it took was the right questions and the willingness to ask them.
Brooks Koepka was born in 1990, grew up in Lake Worth, Florida, in a golf-loving family, and embraced the game as his passion before he'd even popped a pimple. As a sign of things to come, he was a state champion in high school and a two-time ACC Golfer of the Year at Florida State. After graduating from FSU, Brooks turned pro in 2012 and established himself as a winner in Europe before joining the PGA Tour in 2014. Now, with five PGA Tour wins, including three major championships and a stint at world number one under his belt, BK arrives in Palm City, Florida for my interrogation.
Brooks, thanks for doing this with me and my crew here at the Floridian. You have been on a steady rise since you turned pro, really. You know, and since 2012, you've kind of sneakily snuck up on everybody. What happened in the last couple of years?
I needed to grow up a little bit, find out, you know, who I am as a person, and then I think develop maybe a little bit longer or a little bit more as a golfer to really be successful. I think that's kind of why I've had so much success lately.
In a 14-month period, you exceeded the major championship totals of Johnny Miller, Sandy Lyle, Curtis Strange, Greg Norman, Ben Crenshaw, and Ken Venturi, all of whom are Hall of Famers, in 14 months.
Yeah, that's pretty, that's incredible. You look at the names that are on that list, I mean.
So you found out who you were fairly quickly.
Yeah, I guess so, I guess so. It's crazy to think about that. You know, I try not to reflect on it and really think back of what had happened too much, because I feel like I'm still in the moment. I'm still in, you know, maybe the prime of my career.
You turn pro, but instead of going to, you know, web.com, or you go to Europe, why was that?
I didn't have an option. I wasn't the big name coming out of college. I wasn't the big amateur name that, you know, Jordan Spieth was, that Justin Thomas was. I wasn't going to get starts on the PGA Tour, and I wasn't going to get starts on the web.com. So it was pretty simple. You know, I didn't want to go chase Monday qualifiers. I don't even think now if I chased Monday qualifiers, I'd get in more than about four or five of them. I mean, they are difficult.
They are so hard.
You know, you got to shoot so low. And I felt like going to play 4 days of golf and competing was the best way for me. And, you know, it's worked out.
Was it fun coming home after 2 years in Europe?
You know, it was a journey. I enjoyed it. But also, this is where I wanted to be. I wanted to be in the States playing golf.
Well, it didn't take you long to win. 2015 Waste Management. You just looked flat calm. It was obviously an exciting moment.
You know, I was such a hothead early on in my career through college. I remember I broke clubs, would act immature, you know, just wasn't really accepting of golf shots that were 15 feet right of the pin. Once I finally came to terms with, I'm trying my best, kind of sought out GMAC a little bit and Dustin and watched the way that they went about their golf game and how they handled things. You know, Graham's probably one of the grittiest guys I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And Dustin's one of the most chilled and laid back guys on the golf course, and tried to combine what I thought I liked from each of them and kind of made it my own.
Well, your second PGA Tour win was the 2017 US Open. That's pretty impressive. There's always one pivotal thing where you think, if I make this,
yep,
I've really got a chance.
Exactly. And I think 13 was that putt where it's a momentum putt. And then all of a sudden, I had confidence with the putter, even though I just three-putted and missed a couple short ones a couple holes before.
You had confidence after you made that one? Because most people, me, for example, I had a couple of chances where if I'd made that putt on the back nine on a Sunday, I would have had a reasonable chance of winning a major. I just didn't want to be in that place subconsciously where I knew I was going to be so uncomfortable. You wanted to be there.
Yeah, I enjoy that. I think anytime you're uncomfortable, it's a good spot to be. It's all nerves. And I think anytime you get nervous, you're thinking about results. If I make this, the consequences of what might happen. Oh, wow, I can win this golf tournament if I make a couple more of these putts. I remember right after I won, I'd signed the scorecard. I'd checked it 10 times because I was like, there's got to be a mistake here. I went to the bathroom and just looked in the mirror, and I was like, I just won the U.S. Open. I can't believe it. And I remember fist pumping and almost like just nicking the mirror. And I was like, oh man, I thought I broke the mirror. But I was so excited. I didn't know what to do, and just kind of had a moment to myself to kind of gather everything. And then, you know, sitting in the room with everybody and calling my parents and to tell them, it was a cool experience.
Pound for pound, Brooks Koepka may be the strongest man on the PGA Tour. The golf world didn't see him coming, but he has built himself into a beast, both mentally and physically. Brooks is on the leading edge of golf's strength revolution. He's never been afraid to do the work or live his globe-trotting life his way.
Well, there are some rumors circulating about your time traveling around the world. Give me some context on them. Did you eat horse meat in Kazakhstan?
Yeah, I had horse meat, I think, all week.
Yeah?
I didn't know it till Saturday.
You didn't?
Yeah, I didn't know it, but I mean, it didn't change my order on Sunday.
Was it really okay?
Good. Yeah, it was actually really good. I didn't mind it, yeah.
In Turkey, you got sick after eating a Burger King rodeo burger?
Yeah, probably not the best place to order a bacon cheeseburger, and was sick in all of Dubai. I lost about 15 pounds.
Well, your encounters with food haven't all been bad. You win a side or two of Wagyu beef in Japan. It's an unusual prize.
Yes, it's probably one of the best prizes I've ever gotten.
Yeah?
unless you've had it, that Chateaubriand from Wagyu from Japan is absolutely some of the best steak I've ever had. I actually refuse to eat steak in the States now.
Really?
It spoiled me that bad, yeah.
Huh. Well, if you had to choose between the horse meat or the rodeo burger, which would it be?
Oh, horse meat all day.
Yeah. You were the PGA Tour Player of the Year last year and the PGA Player of the Year last year. I mean, it sounds like the same thing, but it's not.
You look at the names that are on these lists, on these trophies, it's incredible. I don't think in my wildest dreams I actually thought that I would actually be sitting here today.
What was the point where you might have seen it coming?
I always felt like I had the talent, I had the ability to be one of the best players in the world, and I felt like I believed it. But to actually do it is a whole other thing. You just got to take control and take the reins and see where it goes. But, you know, you got to enjoy the ride. You really do.
People are saying you're now becoming more outspoken. Is it that, or are people just listening now?
You know, people are starting to ask me different questions, asking me the right questions of something that I actually have an opinion about.
He recently shared his strategy to prod his slowpoke partners to play faster.
Some of these guys are so slow, I'll take my sweet time getting to the ball, go to the restroom and just kind of chill in there for 5 minutes so we get on the clock, and then now we're playing at my pace. This happens for two holes. We play slow for two holes. The other 16 holes, we get to play at my pace.
These rules officials need to, you know, take it in their own hands and actually penalize us. I mean, you penalize a 16-year-old kid at Augusta, but the professionals who are doing it week in, week out, and a lot of the guys are notable guys. Then that's part of the problem. I think a lot of the guys that are the best players in the world are taking their sweet time. Listen, you know what? I've got to embrace the role I'm in. We've got to be outspoken, especially when you're one of the best in the game.
Talk to me about Sergio's outburst in Saudi Arabia.
I just felt like he was disrespecting us as players, and that was it. I mean, there's no point in beating a dead horse.
No horses will be beaten on this show, but as you'll hear, Brooks took a whip to Sergio during a recent podcast.
You know, that's just Sergio acting like a child. It's unfortunate that he's got to do that and complain. Everybody's got to play the same golf course. You know what? I mean, I didn't play very good, but you don't see anybody else doing that. You're 40 years old, so you got to grow up eventually.
I thought it was a bit of a risk, to be honest with you. I mean, in Saudi Arabia, you're liable to get your putter head cut off.
Yeah, it's, you know, time and place. And, you know, I don't think there's really a place for that in golf. You know, it's one thing to, if he's mad, you know, take it out. I've done it, break my own clubs. I'm sure you have too.
You've been pretty good at it. Yeah, I did. Yeah.
I've stomped a few. And then, you know, break it on your bag, whatever, to be like that. But to damage the golf course, I just didn't like it.
I've actually broken another player's club, which I think is something...
Accidentally or on purpose?
No, accidentally. I took a swipe at a tee marker, followed through, and broke Richard Boxall's driver. What about rolling the ball back, the speed on it?
Guys are still going to hit it 300 yards. You can't tell me Cameron Champ isn't going to hit it that far. So Where I think you're really going to see the fall off is the shorter hitters. The guys that hit it 270, 280, they're going to start hitting it 240, 250. You won't see short hitters on tour anymore.
Short, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
I've never had coffee.
What?
Yeah.
I've never had a hot drink.
I'll actually one up that. I like tried a sip of a hot toddy one time and about like died because I was sick.
Right.
Ricky made me do it. He told me it was the only way I was ever going to get
Irish
over it.
Irish whiskey and sugar?
Yeah. It's a US Open qualifier overseas in England.
Yeah.
Got in. It was the one for Pinehurst.
I tried a sip of Irish whiskey once, and then my off switch got broken.
During a 14-month period from June of 2017 through August of 2018, Brooks went from being a big-hitting PGA Tour newcomer to a three-time major champion and one of the most successful ever to play the game. But early last year, all that promise could have been derailed by a wrist injury with the potential to end his career. His wrist healed, but as he prepared to defend his U.S. Open championship at Shinnecock, golf's Rodney Dangerfield was aching for some respect.
Well, at Shinnecock, you weren't listed, you know, as a notable player, and somebody on the team sent a WTF, you know, about that. Was that you?
Coming back as the defending champ after the first day, you know, the first morning was playing quite difficult and shot five over, and there's 10 notables that were on the page, anywhere from just about, you know, 2-3 over to about 10 over, and I wasn't on it, and I felt a little disrespected at the time.
After Brooks announced, "There's nobody here more confident than me," his opening round 75 at Shinnecock wasn't exactly an auspicious beginning for the defending U.S. Open champion. And despite six birdies on Friday, he was still five shots off the pace. But he gained ground on a brutal Shinnecock Saturday, surviving four bogeys against just two birdies to finish 54 holes in a four-way tie for the lead and a Sunday shot at U.S. Open history.
You started in a four-way tie for the lead and made a few birdies to start off, but Tommy Fleetwood shoots 63. You almost know what number you got to shoot.
I could hear the roars. We just didn't know what was going on. There's not many leaderboards. There's maybe two leaderboards in the first couple holes, but you know, you've got to change so many numbers and spell Fleetwood and all this other stuff, and it just gets too complicated. And we finally get to him, and you know, you expect to see double digits on the standard bears, and I look over and I saw, I think it was three over par, and I'm going, whoa, this is, you know, he's turned this around. I mean, this golf course is, I guess, gettable. Now I've got to survive another, you know, 12 holes if I want to win another championship. And you know, the U.S. Open, it's disaster at every corner. You're just trying to figure out every hole that you squeak by with par, you're just, you know, thankful to get by another
every
hole.
Par is a prisoner.
Yeah.
But you bogey 6, 11, and 18. Talk me through 11.
That was probably the most stressful time I think I've ever had playing golf. I was trying to hit this little soft cut 9-iron in there and just double-crossed it, which is the only place you can't hit it. You can hit it 30 yards right in those bunkers and you're fine. And we weren't sure whether it was going to be in the fairway or that fescue back there, and luckily enough, it was in a good lie. And we get back there, and my only thought was, how can I get out of here with making five? So I actually got lucky. It sounds weird. I was trying to hit it in the bunker, but I pulled the chip shot and it kind of bounced left and looked like it was going straight for the pin. And I'm like, just please don't hit the pin. Because if it hits that pin, it's coming right back to where I'm at, and who knows what I make from there. Goes in the bunker. Feel like I'm a good bunker player. All you got to do is hit it inside 10 feet and you got a good look. But I remember watching TV early in the morning and guys were hitting this putt, and I watched guys just burn the right side of the lip. Everything was short right. And I thought, I watched Dustin have like a 35 footer maybe, and he left it about 6 feet short. So I knew I couldn't hit this putt hard enough. I knew I had to give it a little extra. And when I hit it, I mean, I felt like I took a full swing at this thing and it just came off like a rocket. And it hit the back of the hole and went in, and I can't tell you, that was the best bogey I think I've ever made in my life. It felt like making two on a par five. And that's how pivotal that was at that point.
You've got a shot lead on Tommy, who's in the clubhouse. You've got seven holes left to play. You made putts on that back nine. You made every single putt that you had to make. And I mean, everyone watching was thinking, well, he's got to miss one at some stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if I was watching, I would have thought the same thing.
Greatest exhibition of clutch putting that I think I've ever seen.
It gets inside that 8-foot range, and I'm right in the back of the hole. That's all I'm thinking about is, how am I going to get this in the hole? It doesn't matter if I pull, push it, and it still goes in. Could care less. I've just got momentum on my side.
And you birdie 16 for a two-shot lead with two to play. That's not a very big lead in a U.S. Open. Are you thinking at that stage of ways to lose?
No.
No?
I didn't. Never once. I thought 16 was a great opportunity to really capture it. I don't know. I've always looked at momentum. Hey, I've squeaked out 12 through 15 pars when I probably should have made two bogeys.
How important was that tee shot on 17?
17 was probably the best shot I hit the whole tournament. We hit 9-iron.
9-iron?
Yeah.
I want to slap you.
It's one of those things where we couldn't hold the green with 8, even if we cut it up there. So I had to draw a 9.
Does the adrenaline play a factor in that? You know, you've got to be so charged up.
You know, it didn't really matter where it was going to go. That ball was going to go far. And to hit it on there, I mean, it's probably one of the better shots I've ever hit as a professional.
Okay, Brooks, this is Rapid Fire, where I ask you a stupid / you know, clever questions, and you give me brilliant answers. Start the clock, please. What was your first car?
Ford Explorer.
What is the name of the obnoxious cartoon character you met up close and personal at the age of 3?
Was it Barney?
Yes, it was.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Age when you sank your first birdie?
Probably 7, maybe.
You were 3 days. Your dad was holding you in one arm while he hit with the other.
3 days, that's pretty good.
I mean, it says it here, so it must be true.
I was born to play golf.
What was the 9-hole score you shot in 6th grade to earn a spot on your school's varsity golf team?
Even par? 36, maybe?
41.
Well, I guess it wasn't that good.
What was your favorite club to break?
Driver. It's always been driver.
Who's your favorite practice partner?
Dustin.
Yeah?
Or my brother.
Childhood golf heroes?
Tiger and Adam Scott.
Favorite strength exercise?
I would definitely say arm day or chest day. Yeah, those are...
Oh, you have separate days for parts of the body?
Yeah, leg day not so much. But
between you and DJ, who's stronger?
Dustin's got me in legs, but everything else I've got him.
Who's faster?
Me.
Who's funnier?
Me.
Are there any DJ stories that you'd rather not tell here? I was just checking. Yep. That's Rapid Fire with Brooks Koepka, and as always, you win nothing. So how did you come to golf?
My dad, he started me playing when I was younger, and then it kind of became a family activity with my brother and my dad. We'd go out and play on the weekends. But
you were interested in hockey, right?
Yeah, I was interested in hockey, baseball. I was interested in everything.
Weren't you in a car accident on the way to a hockey game, 7 years old?
Yeah, I actually had my seatbelt behind my back. I was trying to show something, and got in a car accident and T-boned a lady, ran a red light, and straight to the dashboard and broke everything in my face. And couldn't play any contact sports for a while. It looked like I'd really gotten into a good fight.
Was it golf from then on?
Yeah, it was, hockey kind of went out the window because I was always afraid of getting hit in the nose. And then just baseball and golf, I kind of had to pick one eventually a little bit later on of, okay, what am I actually going to do? And I think I picked the right one.
Your dad was your first teacher, right? But when you were 12 years old, he put you with Warren Botke.
I had so much to learn, and Warren, it's incredible how much he's kind of influenced me in the game of golf and really kind of opened my eyes to, wow, this is where I could take the game. And, you know, he kind of instilled the confidence and the fire in me, and I wouldn't be where I am today without him, that's for sure.
You know, he has handwritten 5x7 index cards of every lesson that he ever gave you?
I'm actually amazed by that. Yeah, I see him every once in a while. I see him at, obviously, the Honda every year and try to get together with him.
And he was there at Augusta when you teed off at the first. What did that mean to you?
To think when I was a kid, and now I always said I wanted to play Augusta, and that's what I was working towards, as a young kid. And then to finally tee it up there for the first time and have him there, it was special. I mean, I hope it was as special for him as it was for me.
Okay, tell me about your caddy, Ricky Elliott, from my hometown of Bangor. Bangor, Northern Ireland.
Yeah, yes. Ricky, he's a beauty. I love the guy to death. The first time we worked together, it was the PGA Championship in 2013. You know, I enjoy the joke and the laughing. I think that's, you know, maybe a side that most people don't see. You know, they see us when we hit the golf shot and then maybe 5 seconds after, but you don't see the usual walking up.
Ricky is a great match for you, but he's not exactly a tremendous custodian of major championship trophies.
Yeah, that was actually a good one. In 2017, we obviously had changed our plans and decided we were going to go to Vegas. We tried to take it to dinner and they wouldn't let it in. And they're like, you know, only the big trophies, like the Stanley Cup and that stuff. And we're like, well,
what?
Yeah, we're like, well, this is kind of like our version of it. So anyways, we left it in this drawer at the bottom of the drawer of the hotel or whatever restaurant it was. So we left it there. So long story short, we're out and it's early morning, we'll say, coming back and he's carried it all the way up to his room. He's pulled out, gone into his wallet, pulled out his key card, put it in the door and then walked straight in and just left it outside.
Like it was room service somebody had put outside the door?
I think the only way we could have gotten away with that is because we were in Vegas.
I actually lost the Scottish Open trophy completely. It's still lost.
Oh, really?
To this day, yeah. So I'm one up on you there.
More Faherty will continue after a few words from our sponsor.
I'm not getting any younger, as my training coach loves to remind me, but I am getting more experienced. Farmers Insurance is about experience too, which is one reason why they support this show. Well, that and my debonair charm, I assume. So thanks to Farmers, and let's get back to it.
We are Farmers. Bum, ba, da, bum, 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 bum.
Brooks was a man with a plan when he arrived at Belle Reve for the 2018 PGA Championship.
At this stage, are you preparing differently for majors?
I think so. You know, it's been a different way of looking at it. I've got the same crew around me every time for all the majors. It's like the same five or six people. I've got chef, my agent, my coach, and my girlfriend. It's always the same crew. Consistency is big with me. I think if I'm consistent off the golf course, I'll be consistent on the golf course. Maybe that's why I haven't won regular PGA Tour events. It's because when I'm at home, I'm not practicing. I wasn't practicing enough. You know, when I go to the majors, I'm playing the week before or 2 weeks before.
In 2018, the PGA Championship celebrated its 100th anniversary at Belle Reve. And on the occasion of his 100th career PGA start, Brooks was eyeing his third major championship in 14 months. To win it, he would have to outplay his two childhood heroes, Adam Scott and a resurgent Tiger Woods. Brooks didn't play like a contender early, but by Saturday afternoon, he had earned the 54-hole lead. A Sunday pairing with Adam Scott and a down-the-stretch duel with Tiger, as thrilling as any in major championship history.
That final round was epic. Did you have a number in mind going out, or was it just take it as it comes?
I knew if I went out and got off to a good start, it was gonna help tremendously because Tiger was three holes ahead of me. We all know what Tiger does on Sunday. This was what I'd grown up watching, which was so cool.
His sixth birdie at 13 put him just one shot back. What are you thinking at that point? Here he comes.
Hopefully he runs out of holes. it's the same thing that everybody else is thinking. Man, he might actually do this thing. But, you know, I kind of had to take a step back and just figure out what I was going to do. You know, I kind of learned a big lesson. The first time I'd ever played with him in 2013, first nine holes, I think I shot maybe 42. But all I did was watch him. I wasn't focused on what I was doing. And I told myself if I ever got the chance again to play with him or be around him in contention, I was never going to pay attention to what he did.
Four holes to play, it's kind of your time, you know, where you come strong at the end.
Mm-hmm.
You pretty much won the tournament at 15 and 16.
That momentum shift, that's exactly what it was. It was the, I've heard everything Tiger's done and Scotty's making a run. Okay, well, I just need to separate myself. If I can separate myself, I've got a good chance. I've got a par five coming up, a tough par three. You never know what's going to happen. You know, you figure, obviously, you're just thinking, you know, they're going to birdie the same hole, so I just need to get one on them. And if I can get one and keep matching them, then I'll be just fine.
You keep getting that one. You seem to have a knack for it when it comes down to, you know, where the rubber hits the road. Man, you can do it.
I love it. I love being on that big stage.
You do, don't you?
And having that pressure. Where it's, this is make or break. Like, I enjoy that so much. You know, this is why you beat balls for so many hours, or, you know, when you were a kid, this is what you wanted, and then everything just, okay, I, I black out, basically. I get over the ball, I'm not thinking about anything. And sometimes I couldn't even tell you if what had happened for about 5 seconds.
Well, that third major was historic for you and for the sport. You were only one of five players who's won the U.S. Open and the PGA Championship in the same year, and it's a pretty good list. Tiger, Jack, Ben Hogan, and Gene Sarazen, Brooks Koepka. Your name keeps popping up with these amazing players.
My name
players.
Sounds weird when you put it next to theirs.
I don't think so.
It's incredible. I didn't even know that I could do that. I didn't know that that was going to happen. And to look at that and look back at that year, how incredible it was, I don't think I know to this day how special of a year that was.
In April, Brooks will be teeing off in a newly configured major championship season, beginning with the Masters at Augusta, followed by the PGA Championship in May, the US Open in June, and finally the Open in July. It's going to be a great summer if you like golf.
We all know golf resists change. Now we've got a major reshuffling of the schedule at the minute. How do you feel about that?
I like it. As a player's standpoint, I think it's great. I think any player will tell you that if we can get hot, it's only 4 months from the Players to the British Open. I mean, usually when a player gets hot, they can get hot for 2-3 months, and that's a great opportunity to rattle off all four of them.
Yeah. You love the thought of it, don't you?
I do. I'm excited. I'm already itching to get going.
I can see it. Well, there's a lot of gloating that goes on in the Ryder Cup either way.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one of those events. I found this quote from European writer Roger Alton. He wrote, "For a nation which gave us a brilliant TV show called Band of Brothers, the Americans find it hard to bond like brothers or even second cousins. Gratifyingly, they seem to loathe each other. The best part of Europe winning the Ryder Cup, especially with the thrashing, is always the American meltdown afterwards." That's I mean, I'm sorry.
It absolutely is.
Yeah.
And I think one of the biggest things is there's always going to be a winner, there's always going to be a loser. And the problem is the media tries to find a reason why we lost. They're not in that team room. I'm in that team room. There's absolutely camaraderie.
But the bit that upsets me more than anything else is the characterization of the teams, you know, or the U.S. team, that the guys don't like each other. I've been in both team rooms, you know, and there's a fantastic spirit in both of them.
It's just all, it's all crap.
Writers on both sides of the Atlantic seem to pick on Patrick Reed. And I know that he is, he picked up the mantle where Phil left off in 2016. He complained about his pairings. He rubs people the wrong way. He's kind of abrasive, but he's honest.
He's a little different than most guys, no doubt. You know, he sticks, with him and Justine and Kessler, his caddy, they're very, I guess you could say, closed off.
Was there more to that story than the public learned?
No, I don't think so. I think, just like everything, I think things get blown out of proportion. And when somebody writes about it, then, it's like almost a game of telephone. New facts start coming in that aren't really facts. And, I respect Patrick a hell of a lot. And I think even after the incident, I actually have more respect for him, coming out and, texting me and texting everybody and saying, certain things and what had happened. And, he was a man about it and owned up to some things. But, I'd love to pair with him at a Ryder Cup.
You'd like him in your foxhole?
I'd tee it up with him every day.
Is it true that only Justin Thomas saw the golf course before the week started?
No, there was a couple guys that went over a couple weeks before. I think people had forgotten that I actually played the French Open years ago.
Right.
I knew every hole, knew what to expect. I've seen guys tee it up on a golf course they'd never seen before on Thursday because they've got something going on and then go out and win the event.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that's, you don't need to see a golf course before you played it. We all have yardage books. We all see everything. We know exactly how it goes.
Yeah. Ball, hole, ball.
Exactly.
You come from a pretty devoted golf family. Tell me a little bit about your dad.
I don't think anybody loves the game of golf more than my dad. It's quite interesting. I think he plays probably more than I do.
What's the scouting report on your brother, Chase?
Yeah,
and
Chase.
He's playing in Europe the same way that you did?
Yeah, he did. He, he got his European Tour card last year. He's a hell of a player. He just, I think a little bit more maturity, I think, would be
good
for him.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. He's on the right path. He's figuring it out.
We talked about baseball earlier. You've got some history in your family. Your uncle, Dick Groat.
Yep.
Two World Series with the Pirates.
Yeah, the Pirates and the Cardinals. Yeah, it's pretty special when you look back at it. Unfortunately, he had those rings stolen.
He was a standout basketball player, too.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, he was the first player at Duke to have his number retired, which is pretty unique and special. My brother's a big Duke fan.
And he's the only person ever to be inducted into the basketball and baseball, the College Halls of Fame.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, you can't do that nowadays. It's, you know, every sport's too demanding. So it's incredible when you look back during the day at how good he was, you know, to be able to travel and play both sports and get around.
What would you be doing if you weren't a professional golfer?
I'd probably be trying to play baseball, stuck in the minor league somewhere, probably, yeah.
Yeah.
I love baseball so much. I doubt I would have gotten out of the minor leagues, but I would have given it my best shot. I definitely wouldn't be in the majors.
Is there nothing else in golf that would have interested you?
No, I always thought that if I was going to do it, I was going to give it, you know, my all, whether it be, you know, grinding it out on mini tours, or, you know, I wasn't going to give up the dream until I felt like I was just not good enough to actually make it.
Your dad wanted you to have options as a kid, right?
A friend of his and my stepmom's asked me, you know, what was my plan B? And I said, plan B, still plan A. And I never forget it. And I just remember thinking, you know, everyone at the table was trying to convince me that I needed a backup plan. And
how old were you?
I think I was about 17. And I just wouldn't take it no for an answer. I was like, listen, I'm going to make it in golf. I don't care how hard I've got to work, how long it's going to take, but I'll find one way or another to do it.
Were you a late bloomer? By today's standards?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah. Definitely, I definitely was. I needed more time to mature. You know, my brother's kind of in the same standpoint right now. It's I don't know if it's just a Koepka thing where we got to mature a little bit later, but it definitely took me a little bit longer than most people.
You talk about being a role model for kids. You know, when they run up to you and they want your autograph now, I mean, there's only so many that you can sign. You know, so you have to cut that off. But how do you deal with it?
You try to do the best you can. You know, obviously you can't leave and have everybody happy. I think that's something that I didn't understand when I was on their side of the ropes. At Augusta, maybe, must have been 2002, I somehow found my way into the parking lot and I was holding a flag and I wanted Phil to sign it. And I was kind of chasing after Phil. And I got to his car and I, Mr. Mickelson, can I have an autograph? And he, no, he kind of waved me off. Not a big Phil fan for a while, but
you are right. Not.
Yeah, I got his autograph now, so we're
yeah. What are the perks of being you?
The fact that I can kind of get away with going places and nobody knows who I am. You look at guys like Tiger can't go out in public.
Oh,
Phil, you know, they're going to get stopped a million times, and I don't have that problem. You know, I've been out with Ricky, Dustin, and, you know, people have come up to the table before and they're, you know, Dustin, you know, this, Ricky, that, and I can sit there and they won't look at me. They don't even know who I am, which is a blessing in disguise.
Well, I would enjoy it while you can, because a funny feeling that's not going to last.
Yeah.
You know, one of the perks of being me is I get to talk to you on a day like this here at the Floridian. Thank you so much for joining me. I think people will know a little bit more about Brooks Koepka now.
In case you didn't notice, I really like this guy. In the game of golf, major championships are the gold standard of excellence. And while Brooks isn't standing in the footsteps of Jack and Tiger yet, his three major championships put him squarely in the conversation with the game's best ever. But from where I sit, he's not intimidated by his new status, and that should get everyone's attention, because that chip on those broad shoulders now has him focused on a new goal, to be the best of the very best. And he makes my sorry ass look pathetic on and off the golf course. Thanks, Brooks.
Thanks for joining me, Fegherty fans. That's our show for tonight. You can catch me on Facebook, Instagram, and FegherTwit. You can also find more Fegherty podcasts presented by Farmers Insurance on Fegherty.com and your favorite podcast provider. Go to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Art19, or Google Play. Search Fegherty and subscribe. If you love the show, why wouldn't you? Be sure to leave a rating.